Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Record for Wednesday, January 15th, 2020. We begin our reading today with an article entitled, Timing of Request for Pay Raises Angers Board Member. Paxton. A proposal to raise the pay of three employees of the Ford County Circuit Clerk's Office prompted an angry reaction Thursday from County Board Member Debbie Smith, who felt the idea should have been brought to the board during the budgeting process months earlier. We worked our buns off to get the budget done last fall. Now you're coming to us in January? That's what angers me, Smith told Circuit Clerk Kim Evans, who requested the raises. You should have gone to bat for your employees back when you were doing the budget, you know?
I was, Debbie, Evans replied.
No, you weren't, Smith said.
I take offense to that, Debbie, Evans responded.
Smith, a Paxton resident, and the four other four members of the board's finance committee reviewed a proposed resolution calling for the raises as a result of a significantly increased workload and the continued shortage of one employee in Evans' office. The raises were to be retroactive to the start of the fiscal year on December 1, 2019. The same date, each received a 3% cost of living increase. The resolution noted that the employees who were to receive the raises, full-time deputy clerk Jordan Harmon, from $13.03 per hour to $14 per hour, full-time deputy clerk Deborah Slade, from $11.75 per hour to $13 per hour, and part-time deputy clerk Pamela Bailey, from $13.67 per hour to $16 per hour, each had college degrees. Several board members questioned why the employees' educational backgrounds were mentioned. They noted that a policy approved by the board a month earlier, allowing department heads to consider qualifications such as advanced degrees, certifications, or job-related experience when setting the wages for their non-unionized employees, only applies to newly hired employees, not existing ones. Also, the policy does not go into effect until the start of the next fiscal year, December 1, 2020. Evans made no comment in response. Meanwhile, Smith asked Evans to explain why different pay raises were proposed for each employee, specifically questioning why Bailey should get at least $2 more than the other two staffers. Evans explained that the state of Illinois has mandated a whole bunch more reported by circuit clerk's offices, requiring reports to be constantly updated by her staff. We're having to keep updating and updating and updating, and the way we do things, it's changing daily, Evans said.
So Jordan and Deborah don't have to worry about those daily changes, Smith asked.
They do, Evans responded. Evans then explained that the limitations on funding led to the varying proposed raises. While Bailey's raise would be funded by the Circuit Clerk's Office Dedicated Fund, Evans said, Harmon's and Slade's would be funded through the General Fund, which she said did not have enough money available for larger raises due to budgetary constraints. Evans said she spoke with Treasurer Chrisha Shoemaker about the proposed raises from which the revenue sources would be funded, and Shoemaker felt comfortable with the plan. Even so, the Finance Committee's chairman, Chase McCall of Gibson City, suggested that language be added to the resolution to ensure that the raises are funded by the anticipated budget line items. Specifically, McCall asked that language be added that would require Harmon's and Slade's raises to be paid using dedicated fund revenue in the unforeseen event that there is no longer enough money in the general fund's budget to cover them. Meanwhile, Board Member Chuck Aubrey of Gibson City suggested language that be added to the state to state specifically where each salary increase is expected to be coming from within the budget. This led to a broader discussion about whether the board should adopt a new policy requiring that, moving forward, all department heads state in writing what specific funds in the budget would be used to pay for any raises that would be proposed in the middle of the fiscal year. It should be on the resolution up for approval, so that it's on the record, Smith said, just so everybody's on the same page.
The board made plans to discuss further the possibility of drafting such a policy at the Finance Committee's February meeting. McCall told Evans that her proposal for the salary increases would be reconsidered at the February committee meeting as well. "Kim, I'm not hearing no. That's not what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that the resolution needs to be cleaned up, that's all," McCall said. "I think we just need some solid facts before we move forward, and that's not only to protect your office, but to protect our budget and the general fund." "So if you could," McCall continued, "talk to the chief judge to confirm the use of dedicated funds will be acceptable to fund Bailey's pay raise, go back and talk to the treasurer and make sure and mark which dedicated funds you're going to take Bailey's raise out of, then determine the projected general fund cost of the raises for Deborah and Jordan, and then come back to the Finance Committee next month, and we'll see if we can move forward." And now some good economic news. Gibson City plant expected to build 10,000 Dixie Chopper mowers annually. Gibson City. Exactly 104 days after the Alamo Group acquired the Dixie Chopper business, its manufacturing plant in Gibson City built its first Dixie Chopper zero-turn lawnmower. The milestone marked the start of what is expected to become a resurgence of the Dixie Chopper brand. Some 10,000 Dixie Chopper units are expected to be built per year at the plant at 1020 South Sagamon Avenue, according to Dan Samet, president of Rhino Ag, a division of Alamo Group. "It's a real iconic brand," Samet told members of the Gibson Area Chamber of Commerce during their January 2nd general meeting. "We've been overwhelmed with the response we've gotten from dealers and customers." Samet said the Gibson City's plant's bookings for Dixie Chopper mowers for 2020 exceeded expectations, so now the challenge is to get those built, and built right, and delivered to the customers. "Even competitors are happy to see Dixie Chopper mowers being built again," Samet said. Texatron Outdoor Power Equipment Incorporated, a subsidiary of Textron Incorporated, increased production for the mowers in November 2018 before finally agreeing to sell the Dixie Chopper business to Alamo in August of 2019. After the acquisition, Samet said, "We quickly put together a program to go down to the Green Industry Expo in Louisville, and a number of people who came up to our booth were just excited that Dixie Chopper was back in business. Even competitors, they said, the landscape just isn't the same without you." Alamo's acquisition of the Dixie Chopper business took a while. At first, Textron was not willing to sell it, Samet said. "We knew the brand and we'd been wanting to expand our presence in the marketplace, so it just seemed like it might be a good fit. But Textron had no intention of selling the business," Samet said. "It took a while for them to answer the phone, but when they finally did and said, 'We have no interest in selling, we're just done,' but we didn't take no for an answer. We kept at it for a while. Then finally we were able to kind of break the ice a little bit. They had some changes in personnel, and they had someone who was willing to talk. And in August of 2019, we were able to complete the acquisition." "There was a real flurry of activity following the acquisition," Samet said. "We moved into the plant in Gibson City, probably 50-plus trucks of inventory and machinery, some of the fixtures for a lot of the units, things of that nature," he said. "We cleared out an area of the building and put in an all-new overhead crane system for assembling the units and got everything ready to go with the new machinery that was necessary for that. We brought in new robotic welders, and it just so happened that the brand of robots Textron was using at its Dixie Chopper manufacturing plant in Indiana were the same that we were using. So we already knew all the programming, and we had expertise in that regard. That helped with the transition." Prior to the acquisition, Textron shut down its Dixie Chopper manufacturing facility in Greencastle, Indiana, and the lease for its warehouse facility in Indiana was expiring. Following the acquisition, Alamo brought in four workers who were in operations and management in Indiana to work in Gibson City. Meanwhile, Alamo retained the warehousing facility in Indiana, so all the service parts, warranty tech service, and customer service are still being handled over there. About 25 new full-time workers are expected to be hired by the Gibson City plant to support the Dixie product product line, Samet said. Depending on demand, even more could be hired eventually. The bookings program really exceeded our expectations, so if that trend continues in 2020, it might go up another 8 or 12 folks, Samet said. The Gibson City plant, which also produces Rhino Ag tractor-powered pull-behind equipment and Earthmaster heavy-duty primary tillage equipment, currently has about 175 employees. Later this month, the plant will be adding two more Dixie Chopper zero-turn models to the 17 it currently is manufacturing. The model that builds the range width from 40 to 74 inches and in horsepower from 22 to 36. There is not yet a Dixie Chopper dealer base in the Gibson City area. Most of the mowers built will be sent to dealers in the south, where the brand is particularly popular. There are about 300 Dixie Chopper dealers in the U.S. Now from Gibson City, jackpot exceeds $102,000 for this week's Queen of Hearts drawing. Gibson City. Billy Joe Denny was present at Monday's meeting of the Gibson City Council to seek the city's cooperation with bus transportation to this week's Queen of Hearts fundraiser event. Denny said the fundraiser is for the proposed Ed Day Memorial Skate Park and is still going strong, and this week's jackpot exceeds $102,000. She said attendance at the weekly drawing is far exceeding parking availability at the Krause Center in Gibson City. To help with the parking shortage, two school bus drivers have volunteered their services and buses to transport patrons to the Krause Center from various other parking lots, including those at the Sand Trap, the Downtown Farmers Market area, and Railside Golf Course. City officials agreed to cooperate by providing orange cones to mark off a bus lane at the Cruise Center. Now from Paxton, PBL High School Alumni Hall of Fame nominations sought. Paxton. Nominations for the Paxton Buckley Lota High School Alumni Hall of Fame are being accepted until March 1st. Nominees should have a record of outstanding achievement before or after graduation from Paxton Buckley Lota High School, Paxton Community High School, Buckley Lota High School, Ford Central High School, Roberts Thawville High School, or Roberts High School. Areas of consideration include schooling and/or work experience after graduation, awards and honors while in school, awards and honors after graduation, professional contributions, community activities, and their positive impact on the school district, society, and the world. The selection process begins in March each year and culminates in May. An induction ceremony is held in September or October at PBL High School's annual homecoming football game. Nominations are kept on file, and applicants do not need to resubmit them if a nominee is not selected for the Hall of Fame during a given year. Nominations may be emailed to halloffame@pblpanthers.org or mailed to PBL High School, P.O. Box 50, Attention, Alumni HOF Committee, Paxton, Illinois, 60957. Also from Paxton, stop signs to be installed at intersection near Daycare Park. Paxton. Stop signs will be installed to slow down drivers on Elm Street where it intersects on Home Street on the west side of Paxton. City Council voted 5-2 on January 14th to make the intersection, located near the Paxton Daycare Center and Howard Thomas Park, a two-way stop. In December, the council directed Police Chief Coy Cornett to set up a speed trailer at Elm and Home Street to monitor speeds at the intersection. However, Cornett said the measure was inconclusive in showing that the addition of traffic control signs would be needed there. Cornett said there had only been one accident in 10 years at the intersection. Cornett said that if the council wanted a traffic control sign installed there, he would recommend stop signs rather than yield signs. Alderman Cammie Johnson Anderson, said last month she was reluctant to install more yield and stop signs where there are already so many in town. However, she said she spoke with Jeff Brown, who lives near the daycare center, and the daycare center's director, Amy Baradas, who both told her they thought something needed to be done. Now from the Ford County Board. Ford County Board member, how come it's paid if we haven't voted on it? Paxton. A member of the Ford County Board wants to know why some bills are being paid before the board approves them. The question arose after the board made plans during its January 13th meeting to withhold payments of a $4,833 bill for repairs to the garage door at the sheriff's office and jail. The withholding of payment was suggested so that the board could first determine whether the bill had been submitted to the county's insurance company. It turned out, however, that the bill had already been paid. How come it's paid if we haven't voted on it? Asked Board Member Tom McQuinn of Rural Paxton. We should have a deadline for department heads to submit their bills to the board, and if the bills aren't submitted before that date, then they need to wait until the next month. There was speculation that the board at some point in the past approved a policy allowing bills to be paid prior to approval in order to avoid late fees. Circuit Clerk Kim Evans pointed out that the county recently had to pay the Postal Service for a postal box rental without the board's approval so she could continue to access her department's mail. Also at the January 13th board meeting, Zoning Committee Chairman Randy Ferguson of Gibson City scheduled the next meeting of his committee for 7 p.m. Tuesday, January 28th in the board's meeting room in the basement of the jail. The committee plans to continue to review the proposed revisions to the county's ordinance regulating wind farms, a process that has yet to be completed despite more than 2 years of talks. Board member Bernadette Ray of Gibson City said she is concerned that after all this work, there will not be enough board members without a conflict of interest to approve the proposed new ordinance when it comes to a vote. The 12-member board needs at least 9 members to vote yes for the ordinance to be approved. McQuinn said that he, for one, will not be filling out a questionnaire from State's Attorney Andrew Killian asking board members if they would have a conflict of interest in voting on the changes. Whether a board member has a conflict is up to that individual, McQuinn said. Meanwhile, 2 residents spoke about the wind farmed ordinance at the meeting. Resident Kaylin Davis said the 2 most contentious issues are setbacks and noise levels. Davis said most rural homes are on 80-acre plots, which automatically build in very ample setbacks. Davis also said she checked out decibel levels where she lives in the country, and with nothing going on, the ambient noise level was at 70. Davis said she recently read an article stating that ocean waves are at about the same decibel as a wind turbine's blades and that no one minds that noise. On the other hand, resident Kendall Hornstein, who farms around turbines near Saybrook, said, "They're a nuisance and I'm totally against them." Hornstein said he recently moved back to Ford County. And in court news, probation revoked for farmers serving sentence for federal crop insurance fraud. Peoria. An Iroquois County farmer has been ordered to serve 364 days in prison for violating the terms of probation he received upon being convicted of federal crop insurance fraud. Jeremy Sedgbrook, 40, of Cisna Park, was immediately taken into custody on January 9th after U.S. District Judge James Shadid revoked his probation and sentenced him to serve 364 days in the Federal Bureau of Prisons. In December 2016, Shadid had sentenced Sedgbrook to 3 years of probation for making false statements to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Sedgbrook had underreported the number of bushels of corn produced in relation to a federal crop insurance claim. During his term of probation, Sedgbrook was barred from participating in any USDA programs and was ordered to pay restitution in the amount of $300,759 to Heartland Crop Insurance. During the January 9th court hearing, Sedgbrook admitted violating his probation by 1. Participating in the federal crop insurance program through his sister's company, Sega Ag Production Incorporated, receiving monetary benefits from a USDA program through Sega Ag Production, 3. Obtaining a $64,981 loan to buy a Ford Super Duty F-350 truck without prior approval from the U.S. probation officer, and 4. Violating a state order of protection against him obtained by his wife, and 5. Failing to notify his probation officer of his November 27, 2019 arrest for violating the order of protection. Assistant U.S. Attorney Eugene Miller prosecuted the case, which was investigated by the USDA's Office of Inspector General. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Record for Wednesday, January 15, 2020. Martin Michael Mike Gardner, Paxton. Martin Michael Mike Gardner, 69, died peacefully at his home in Paxton on Wednesday, January 8, 2020. A funeral mass was celebrated on Wednesday, January 15th at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church in Gibson City, with Father Don Van Buy officiating. Burial with military honors took place at Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorial contributions may be made to Boy Scouts Troop No. 32 or to the Mike Gardner family. Christy L. Miller, Gibson City. Christy L. Miller, 54, died Friday, January 10th after fighting a courageous battle against cancer. A Celebration of Life gathering will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, January 17th at the Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City, with a Law Enforcement Honor Guard ceremony and walkthrough at 5 p.m. Her family has requested casual attire for the gathering. Memorial contributions may be made to St. Jude's Children's Hospital or the Champaign County Humane Society. Pearl L. Roberge, Watseka. Pearl L. Roberge, 94, of Watseka, mother of an Onarga resident, died Tuesday, January 14, 2020, at Watseka Rehab and Health Care Center. A funeral services will be at 2 p.m. Friday, January 17th, at the Knapp Funeral Home in Watseka, with the Reverend Father Michael Powell officiating. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. Friday, January 17th, at the funeral home. Burial will take place at a later date at Oak Hill Cemetery in Watseka. Memorials may be made to the St. Edmund Catholic Church. We return to the news with a story entitled, Rural Buckley Man Gets Probation for Beating Elderly Man Outside Bar. Watseka. On the day he was to stand trial for the alleged beating of an elderly man outside a Buckley bar, a 27-year-old rural Buckley man pleaded guilty to one count of aggravated battery and was sentenced to 4 years of probation. As part of a plea agreement negotiated by his attorney, Ron Boyer of Watseka, and the Iroquois County State's Attorney's Office, Shane A. Weber entered the plea on Wednesday to the Class II felony charge, which alleged he caused great bodily harm to a person 60 years of age or older. In return, prosecutors agreed to dismiss a second aggravated battery charge, a Class III felony, alleging Weber knew the victim was age 60 or older. Both charges allege that Weber struck Buckley resident Michael L. Hillegas, then 67, in the head as they were outside the Dutch Master Bar at 114 South Railroad Avenue on July 9, 2017. Hillegas told the Ford County Record that he was left with bruises and cuts all over his head and body, a broken collarbone, and hemorrhaging in his brain. Hillegas was hospitalized for 2 days after the incident. The 4-year probation sentence Weber received was the maximum community-based sentence he could have received under truth in sentencing guidelines. Alternatively, Weber could have been sentenced to up to 7 years in prison. Conditions of his probation, as ordered by Judge James Kinzer, include having no contact with Hillegas or his wife Rita, not owning or possessing a firearm or deadly weapon, not leaving Illinois without prior permission of the court or probation department, and submitting to drug testing and testing positive. Weber also ordered to pay fines totaling more than $1,000. Restitution of up to $115,000 will be ordered at a later date. Weber was also allegedly involved in a December 2016 fight at the same bar. In that incident, 25-year-old Lyons resident Daniel K. Connolly lost his life when two other men used their body weight to hold him down and he suffocated. Prosecutors, however, did not charge anyone. In December 2017, a wrongful death lawsuit was filed in Iroquois Circuit Court by Mr. Connolly's estate against the bar, Weber, and the other two men, Iroquois County residents Michael Bristle and Stephen Neiman. The six-count civil complaint seeks in excess of $50,000 in damages for each count. Depositions are expected to be completed this month, and attorneys for the plaintiff and defendants are scheduled to participate in a telephone conference at 1:15 p.m. February 19th. In other court news, Gibson City man convicted of 9 counts of unlawful possession of weapon by felon. Paxton. A convicted felon from Gibson City who had access to guns and ammunition purportedly owned by his father was convicted this week of 9 counts of unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon and faces a mandatory prison term when sentenced in March. A 12-member jury deliberated for about 30 minutes Tuesday before returning the verdict against Noah P. Ringle, 37, following a one-day trial in Ford County Circuit Court. Judge Matt Fitton immediately ordered Ringle into the custody of the Ford County Sheriff's Office until he is sentenced at 10 a.m., March 26th. Ringle faces a mandatory sentence ranging from 2 to 10 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections. Ringle, who has felony domestic battery conviction from Tarswell County in 2006, allegedly possessed a Remington shotgun, a Ruger Mini 14 rifle, and a Magnum Research 1911G pistol, along with various ammunitions at his home at 406 South Church Street in Gibson City in October of 2017. After receiving information about the weapons and confirming Ringle's status as a convicted felon, Gibson City police officers executed a search warrant at the residence, finding a large gun safe which held the firearms and ammunition. During his trial, Ringle and his father, William Ringle, both testified that the safe, the firearms, and the ammunition belonged to the elder Ringle, who stayed in the home. They both testified that the younger Ringle did not know the combination to the safe and therefore could not access its contents. However, State's Attorney Andrew Killian presented testimony showing that on at least one occasion, Noah Ringle had opened the safe and handled two of the firearms while showing them off to a friend. Further, Gibson City Police Captain Caleb Kraft testified while police were executing the search warrant, Noah Ringle provided Kraft the combination to the safe over the telephone. In a news release, Killian praised the work of Gibson City Police, including Chief Adam Rosendahl, Kraft, former Officer Victor Crouch, and the late Lieutenant Tony Rowe. And we close with an announcement. Farm Toy Show set for February 1st at PBL High School. Paxton. The Paxton Buckley Loda High School FFA Chapter's 32nd Annual Farm Toy Show is scheduled for 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Saturday, February 1st at the high school in Paxton. In addition to featuring numerous vendors selling farm toys, the event includes a silent auction, door prizes, a pedal tractor pull event at noon, a concession, and lunch available for purchase. There will also be farm toy displays with trophies awarded for the best of show and best display. Prior to the event, 100 1/16th scale models of a Minneapolis Moline U-Gas tractor will be sold by the FFA chapter for $65 apiece. Order forms are available by calling Jim Biggs at 217-822-1160. And that's all the time we have for reading today's Ford County Record. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again soon.